Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Field. That ball is going. It is gone.
Barrett. All right. Michael Savage back from the ball game. I survived. Almost. Now, I am going to talk about politics. I am going to talk about who the president is of NPR. I'm the only one who's actually looked into Vivian Schiller's background. And you're going to be shocked to learn who it is who fired the milquetoast reporter for NPR. And Fox News named Juan Williams. You're going to find that out when I disclose to you, the first one in the media to have actually looked into Vivian Schiller's background. You're not going to be surprised to find out why she did it. I mean, it's classic Soviet behavior, and that's her background. But before I do that, before I get into today's show, and of course the monologue will be something interesting to you as well. A monologue is entitled, What Do Michael Savage and Juan Williams Have in Common? The answer is everything and nothing, and is fascism fashionable? I will talk about all these things and more here on The Savage Nation, but first I want to take you back to yesterday. Now, those of you who follow my show every day as though it's a Lone Ranger serial that has been ongoing for 16 years, 5 days a week, come rain, come shine, with rare breaks here and there for, you know, regular life 101. Yesterday I took the day off to go to a ball game, which is almost anomalous to Michael Savage because I don't like sports. It's not that I hate sports. It's not that I don't appreciate the skill of professional athletes. I do. I just don't like stadiums, and I don't like crowds, and I'd rather participate in something than observe it. It's sort of like watching sex. I mean, either I'd rather do it or not look at it. So to me, voyeurism of any kind is not that interesting. Now, having said that, I went to the ball game anyway. Why? I have a wonderful family, and unfortunately, like most American families today, we're dispersed throughout the country. But out of nowhere, my number one son said, Dad, I have 10 tickets to the game between the Giants, the San Francisco Giants, for last night, and the Phillies. And he was flying in, you know, to meet us. And I said, well, look, I don't think I'm going to go. They said, come on, blah, blah, blah. So I said, how could I not go to this? It's like a once in a lifetime. It's three rows up from the field. It's, you know, the row behind the owners. He always does everything great. He originally took us to the Indianapolis 500. A couple of years ago when he sponsored a race car, you know, all of that good, you know, these good sporting events are the heart and soul of America, to be honest with you. All right, so we go. Now, the first problem was how to get there. Originally said, Dad, why don't we go on your boat and we'll dock off the stadium and you get a captain to do it. And I said, it's impossible. It's just too much. There's no docks there. I don't want to drop the hook and go ashore with a boat, you know, blah, blah, blah. So we worked it out. We went by a public ferry service that goes right to the park, which is really amazing. 1,000 people are on the boat. Mayhem, like riding a subway car with propellers. Everything I have not done in 20 years, everything I've worked my whole life to avoid. There I was back on the Q44A on Union Turnpike going to work in the luncheonette. But so what? I mean, I don't really mind the average person. I could have done without some of them, but by and large, we all left each other alone. It was a normal crowd of people going to a ball game. You know, who knows people's intelligence levels. So anyway, we get to the game, and let's see. On the way to the boat, I had a scotch and a beer. Why? Because I could. It was a day off, and I figured, why not? I mean, isn't that what you do at ball games? You drink, and you eat food that you normally don't eat. Isn't that the object, is to forget yourself for a day? So I forgot my diet. I threw it out the window. I had a 12-year-old and an American beer. That's to get on the ferry. I mean, through the ferry ride. We get into the stadium, and of course, you know, it's like the Roman Colosseum to me. We may as well be walking in to watch people murdered on the field because it felt the same level of madness amongst the crowd and the eyes and the ears and the smells and the madness and the frisking and the this. And it was like, you know, security of the crotch and the ears, eyes, nose, and throat from the Chesterfield man. And there were all of the greatest sausage smells you've ever smelled in your adult life that you can't eat, but you did anyway. And another three beers for me and the guys. I give me three. And the guy says, do you have ID? I said, yeah, I need ID. He said, no, you have to have a, I'm joking with you. He said, you can't buy more than two beers if you're alone. So I called a couple of the guys. There were 10 of us. Man, we had a couple of beers, get to the stand forever, blah, blah, blah. I lasted two innings. Now you're going to say, now, come on, how could you walk out of a $1,000 seat after two innings? Well, let me tell you, very easily. I had two backup plans because everyone said, are you really going to sit through a nine-inning game with your, you know, nervous system, your intensity, your level, your interest, you don't like bull? I said, no. I said, I'll try, but I doubt it. So how are you going to get out of here in this mayhem? No one could come pick you up. I said, I have a backup plan. I took a ferry schedule with me. The ferry schedule lined up. So about, I make a long story short, about 5:40 p.m., which must have been an hour into the game, out of nowhere, I didn't even threaten. Something in me snapped, and I said, I'm leaving. No one even asked, like it was Dad's leaving, Michael's leaving. Yeah, they expected it, but they didn't think it would be that soon. Excuse me, gotta go, and boom. Well, I didn't want to get wet anymore because I lost my voice, the little laryngitis, I'm out of business. So I rush out, couldn't find my way out immediately. It was blah, 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 get on the street, no taxis, mayhem. I start walking along the Embarcadero. I grab a cab. I said, take me to the ferry terminal. I said, it's a 6:20 ferry. Boom, drops me. I get there as the 5:55 is leaving. I wave. They stop the ferry. I get on it. At 5:55, I'm on it. I'm back in the other, on the other side of the bay at 6:15, and I'm in my bed by 6:40 with the dogs. And then I turn the game on television. Life is good. I mean, can it get any better than watching a game on television? Frankly, it was better on television. I have no idea why people go to an event. I don't understand it. You could see the guy throw the ball. You could see the eyes, the sweat, the nose hair. I mean, it's unbelievable, the television today, right? I mean, is that the way to watch? So there it was. That was the story. Now, I know you'd rather talk about Obama, Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi, Marxism, communism, trickle-up poverty, how my book is not at airports, how liberal bookstore owners are hiding the book, yet the book is still beating a leprechaun, how it's rising without any help from anyone in the media, and also who the president and CEO is of NPR and why she fired a rather nice man, I am sure, but a rather milk toastish man named Juan Williams. I've never been impressed with Juan Williams. He was always the token liberal on Fox. He looked like a nice enough guy with a reasonable intelligence, not too much brightness there, on a level of a set of bulbs, let's say, in a hardware store. I don't know, a 60, maybe a 60 water. So that, nothing wrong with it. I mean, 60 watts is good, frankly, for the media, but nothing more than that. And yet, NPR put out the 60-watt bulb because it didn't agree with the 20-watt leftists that they used to. So I wake up today, and I say, how am I going to cover this for my audience in a way that would make what may be of any interest to them without talking about him? So I said, let me begin by doing some work on the president who fired Juan Williams, Vivian Schiller. Vivian Schiller joined NPR as president and CEO in January of 2009. If you can believe it, this harridan runs NPR's network around the entire country and is the head of the worldwide media operations for this communist front group. Now, who is she? Well, let's start with where she worked before NPR, because no one's covered this. Not even the geniuses at Fox did this, because they're hiding it, too. Prior to joining NPR, Vivian Schiller worked at the New York Times as senior VP and GM of the New York Times website, NewYorkTimes.com, the liberal NewYorkTimes.com. What did she do before the NewYorkTimes.com? This left-wing harridan worked before the NYT at CNN. She was the senior VP of CNN Productions, where she read CNN's long-form programming efforts, including left-wing documentaries, anti-Israel hit pieces, anti-military, anti-American pieces. So she won awards for that, all left-wing awards. And what did Ms. Schiller do before that? Well, before CNN, before the New York Times, before NPR, before this scandal, Schiller began her career as a simultaneous Russian interpreter in the former Soviet Union, which led her to documentary production work for Ted Turner. Now, what did she do before that? Well, Schiller graduated from Cornell University with a bachelor's in Russian studies and Soviet studies and a master's in Russian from Middlebury College. So let's trace the arc from Juan Williams to the Soviet Union. We got a Russian student, let's say, or a Russian operative in some way, or let us say someone who is sympathetic to the ex-Soviet Union's policies, because that's how I see it. She goes from there. She goes to Turner Broadcasting because, as you well know, Ted Turner is a lifetime internationalist. She goes from Turner to CNN. She goes from CNN to the NYT. She goes from NYT to NPR. And now the whole world sees the face, the ugly face, the hideous face, the deformed face of NPR and left-wing fascism. Now, that leads me to the next point, the monologue for today, which is, what do Michael Savage and Juan Williams have in common? Answer, everything and nothing. And I'll tell you more about it when I come back right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Darling, you send me. I know you send me. Darling, you send me. Honest you do.
So we saw the face of liberal fascism. Apparently, fascism is now fashionable at NPR. And I'm going to talk about what the Michael Savage and Juan Williams have in common, answer everything and nothing. Remember now, remember what happened here. The liberal fascists cut off his head instantly. The blogosphere and the media go into overdrive to defend Juan Williams and attack the liberal fascists at NPR, and rightly so. But let me take you back 2 years. You had a member of the American media, Michael Savage, banned by a Western democracy, prohibited from entering their nation on false charges and false allegations. Moreover, my reputation was permanently smeared by linking me with murderers and terrorists. My free speech was assaulted. My freedom of travel was assaulted. And almost no American journalist went to my defense. Why? Beware the government media complex, warned Michael Savage in 1998 at a speech before the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco. Why is it they would go in overdrive to defend Juan Williams while ignoring Michael Savage? The answer is because while we are in extremely dangerous times where fascism is becoming not only the norm but fashionable, okay? You get it? Not only that, but those who attacked NPR for firing Juan Williams were absolutely right to do so. But he is basically just another member of the government media complex. And as such, the media will defend him. He is a member of their sorority. I, Michael Savage, am an outsider, so they refuse to defend me. To them, I don't exist. But that doesn't matter to me. I've made it as an outsider. Trickle-up poverty has succeeded in spite of them, not because of them. And this shows you something, again, that even without Fox News, even without the media, you have found my book and you're buying it. They're not as all-powerful as they would like to believe. The parallel is the Tea Party. The Republican Party wisely embraced the Tea Party after many, many months of rejecting them. And the Tea Party candidates have wisely embraced the Republican Party rather than splitting off into a third party. Okay? The same is with the media. The longer Fox News continues to try to marginalize me, the more they will be seen as an arm of the Republican Party. Do you get that? And the day they reach out to Michael Savage and independent, like-minded people like myself is the faster their ratings will grow because we represent the independent movement in this country. Not Leprechaun. Not Wallbanger. Not Crybaby. Don't you get it? I mean, they're very good at what they do, but Crybaby, Wallbanger, and Leprechaun have had their day in the sun. People know that they're an arm of the Republican Party. They can only listen to the blackboard and the screeches on the blackboard ever so long. I mean, how many times can he put himself in the hospital with another false ailment? Now, having said all of that, I have to editorialize in another way for one moment. I told you Wednesday the following. I said to you, please, if you intend to buy this book before Christmas or in a couple of weeks when you have the money, don't. I said, do it Thursday, do it Friday, do it Saturday, do it Sunday. Why? We've got to get it up to number one on the list, or else the comedian's book will remain number one, and Obama will say that's a harbinger of the election to come. No one really cares about trickle-up poverty and the right-wing attack. They only love the comedian, okay? It's not true. He has the entire media behind him. The very same liberal fascist media that threw out Juan Williams is supporting the comedian's ghost-written book. 1-800-449-8255. Now, many of you are asking me to do a Bible thing because it's Friday and because I've been off schedule for 3 weeks. I'm going to read you the Ecclesiastes because it is Friday, and I'm going to sort of get back to regular programming starting today. Many of you don't even know Ecclesiastes. He's not as bad a guy as you think. He's not as frightening as you think. No one even knows who he is. But Ecclesiastes said this: a good name is better than precious oil, and the day of death better than the day of one's birth. It is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men. And the living will lay it to his heart. Now listen to this one. Those of you who are depressed, you don't even realize your depression is your friend. And every time you medicate yourself, you're actually fighting with yourself. Vexation is better than laughter, for by the sadness of the countenance, the heart may be gladdened. Do you understand this? That all of this medication is an attempt for you to bury your own soul? Your soul is crying out with sadness for the world you're living in. Your soul is crying out for the horrible, degenerate scum that run this country. Your heart is breaking to see a once great nation broken over the knee of vermin. You look at the filth pumped out of Hollywood. You look at them dancing as though ancient Roman Romanovs. Rahm Emanuel flies to Hollywood, and he dances with these degenerate gold idol worshippers to bring money back to Chicago. Doesn't that make you feel sick? Doesn't that depress you? Ecclesiastes say vexation is better than laughter. For by the sadness of the countenance, the heart may be gladdened. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. Take a look at the degenerate sluts in and out of rehab every day. You think they are happy? You think the whores of Hollywood are happy? The degenerate drug addict whores are not happy? The heart of fools is in the house of mirth. It is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. I'll read more of Ecclesiastes on the Savage Nation in a moment, and then you'll understand why trickle-up poverty is rising, despite the leprechaun.
Savage.
A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to reap, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to laugh, a time to weep. To everything.
It's unbelievable. I got chills up and down my spine from this. Go ahead, mock God. A time to break down.
A time to dance, a time to mourn.
Time to dance, a time to mourn. Weigh stones. To gather stones together. Ecclesiastes 2. Actually, it's Ecclesiastes 3. To everything there is a time. Yes, there is a time to laugh, but there's also a time to not laugh. A time to dance, for sure, but a time not to dance. Yes, there's a time to embrace, and there's a time to refrain from embracing. Go tell that to the bisexual sluts in the media who think that tongue-kissing and having your 12-year-old daughter dressing up like a harlot is something that is wonderful in America. Go tell that to the boys from Brazil who are now residing in Los Angeles, who pump pollution into the minds of your children day and night, the sewer pipe from Hollywood into every child's brain in this country. Go tell that to the golden idols of Los Angeles, where Obama is now bowing down to the golden rings. Some president, eh? Some president flying down to Los Angeles for money for this election. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace. Read your Bible. There's nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink and make his soul enjoy pleasure for his labor. This also I say, that is from the hand of God. So there, I've given you your Bible for Friday. We are We are a group here on the Savage Nation that is diverse in its thinking. I understand that. And its composition. How do I know who's listening to the show? You go to a stadium, there's 45,000 people and God knows 20,000 outside clamoring to get in. You see every range of human being virtually. Well, except those who are, you know, bedridden. I'm saying quite a range of humanity. From the high to the low. From the good to the evil. And you can't even tell them really from one to the other. And then you come back to a radio studio and you're basically in a laboratory again. I may as well be in a greenhouse. I may as well be back in my days as a botanist, working in a greenhouse, growing rare exotic tropical plants, watching my little plants grow, from the plants that snap dragonflies in their petals to plants that are camouflaged, you don't even know what they are, to humble plants, to aggressive plants. I mean, there's a lot of things going on inside the world of plants. They may not speak, but believe me, they speak quite loudly. They've been around before we were, and they'll be around long after we're gone. As you know, if you've studied the gutters of New York, as I have, you'll see that there are street weeds that grow up in every crack. How is it that a plant can grow up out of a crack in a slummy street? How is it that if you throw garbage in the backyard of a slum in New York behind an apartment building, you'll still find plants coming up under the garbage? Well, go to the Buddhism for that answer. Read your Buddhist tractates. Out of the muck, a flower grows. Have you ever seen the beautiful flower that grows out of the muck of a swamp? Gorgeous. How is that possible? Because it's actually a metaphor for our lives. In some ways, some of us live in a swamp and we want to get out of it. But even in the swampiest creature on earth, somewhere within that swampy creature, there's got to be a flower. Somewhere. I hate to sound so, you know, Dr. Seuss here and so Libby. But what am I going to tell you? It's true. Somewhere within all of us, there is a flower waiting to emerge from the muck. And what we have to do as a gardener is find the flower within ourselves. And that's as preachy as I'm going to get today. I got to go back to my normal, you know, show because I go down this road here. And what happens is some people get turned off. They figure I'm too preachy. Then other people like it because they say I love it because we don't get it from anywhere. We thirst for the Bible as interpreted through your mind because you filter it through everyday occurrences and through the news of the day. I understand all of that. I understand all of that. And sometimes I've been very tempted to do a show on the weekend for an hour, you know, a Bible show or a religion show, you know, the all face thing. I don't know. I don't have unlimited time on earth, number one. You know, I got to start building my burial mound, my pyramid somewhere. I'm not an ancient pharaoh, but everyone has to think about those days, don't they? What am I going to do with all of my papers, all my writings, all my manuscripts, all my collections? Where are they going to go? All my hopes and dreams that no one's ever seen. Should they just be thrown in a garbage can? That's what I should do. Take all of these all these decades of writing, reading, searching, whether it be from the early days of just being a writer to a botanist to an anthropologist to a talk show host. Should I throw it all in a garbage can? I'm not going to do it. I have to create a little museum, the centerpiece of which will be the 1965 Caddy convertible that I actually thought of auctioning off to get rid of it because I don't need it. But then I said, wait a minute, save it for the museum, put it as a centerpiece to the Savage Museum somewhere. So my mind is like on this other stuff. At the same time, I got one eye on the ground, I got one eye on heaven, so to speak. You know what I'm saying? That's where my head is at right now. So I can't get too heavily into the Bible. That's what I'm saying to you. But when I talk about throwing your life in a garbage can, I'm hearkening back to my young childhood, I don't know, 5 to 10, when I worked at my dad's antique store on Ludlow Street in New York, now very fashionable with bars and this and that. It was just a kind of a dump when we were down there, really mean streets. Whatever, he made a living out of it. And in the basement of the store, there were various stalls that the men had where they kept the goods that they didn't bring up, mainly junk, you know, they bought at auction, this and that. I'd go down there to clean the bronzes with the cyanide. You've heard that story before. I'm not going to bore you with it again. But in that basement, in that dank, dark, horrible basement, which had one 20-watt yellow bulb, it may as well have been out of Dickens in that cold, unheated basement where I worked as a little boy. Today, he would have been arrested for child abuse. Thank God he wasn't. I mean, I needed a job. I was glad to make the money. It was better that than staying home and smoking pot with the weaklings, you know. So anyway, I'm down in the basement cleaning the bronzes, and there were big barrels. They were old wine barrels that the men bought for, like, junk. Not wet garbage, but as they'd sort through the stuff they would buy at auction, they'd throw the stuff out that they couldn't sell. Or what did they throw out? What they threw out, I found to be precious as diamonds. Here I am, 8 years old, And instead of working with the rubber apron cleaning a bronze, I'm filtering through the barrel, pulling out life stories. I wish to God I could make a movie of this. I wish I could. Well, I will if I ever do the movie of me. This is going to be a seminal scene. I'm down there. I'm supposed to be working, and I'm taking a break from the dank, from the caustic cyanide solution in Dickens' basement. And I'm going through these barrels that the men threw the stuff in that they couldn't sell. And what's in the barrels? You'd see a whole life story. You'd see a young man who goes to Europe as a composer. And you'd see all of his compositions, his musical writings, handwritten out, in the garbage. And you'd see pictures of him on the dock on the west side as he leaves, waving to the friends. Why, there goes John. He's going over to Europe. He's going to be a famous composer. He's going to be an American in Paris. There he was, waving away. And then you see the sequence of pictures of John, the snapshots that were found in the trunk. There he is on the ship drinking and having a drink. Then he's in Paris and he's having a good time. And as the time goes on, he looks worse and worse. And then there's like nothing, like a dull. And then the manuscripts and Dear Mom, and it's in the garbage, a whole life. Then, of course, I told you about the nun's trunk and what was found at the bottom of the nun's trunk, didn't I? It's in my earlier book, Psychological Nudity. But I'm getting off the track right now. It's just that it's Friday. I'm in a talky mood. I'm in a storytelling mood. It's sort of the beginning of autumn, winter already. We got our first good rain here in Northern California, which I love. You know, it drives away all the pollen. And right away, the schmucks lit up a fire. I mean, what could be better? God gives us clean air, and the liberal schmucks light up a fire the next second. What could be better than a confirmation of the idiocy and stupidity of environmentalists who have peace signs on their front door and light up a wood fire the minute it rains? I mean, what could be better? There can be no better satisfaction than watching the foibles of the insane who think that they think. So going back to what do Michael Savage and Juan Williams have in common, the answer is everything and nothing. Now, here's a guy who never said one word about my being banned in Britain. Here I am talking about him. But there's nothing new about that. I go where the story is. When Rush Limbaugh got in trouble for the you-know-what, the whatever, right? I defended him. Never one word from him about me. I don't expect it. When the leprechaun was caught up in the sex scandal at Fox Sport Off, I didn't say anything against him. I defended him, the loofah thing. You remember that? So anytime one of the people in the media is falsely accused of, I think it's unrighteous, I'll defend them. As I defended U.S. Marines falsely accused. Do I expect them to defend me in return? No. Would I like it? Yes. But I know too much about life to expect little men to behave any other way. That's all. And to me, this marks me as a person. It makes me a better person. I have to tell you that because you're not going to tell me that. And he shall judge between the nations and shall decide for many peoples. And they shall beat their swords into plowshares. Did you know about that one? Well, the liberals tell you that. They shall beat their swords into plowshares. That's a beautiful idea from Isaiah. And their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. That's a beautiful thought. The problem is you have a Hitler on the earth right now named Ahmadinejad, who, as you, your schmuck, is beating your sword into a plowshare, he is turning his plowshares into nuclear weapons. You putz, you morons, you psychopaths. We're riddled with Muslim fascists in this country. Oh, not all of them. We recognize that. But who do you think was behind Juan Williams' firing? It was none other than my old friends at CAIR, the Muslim Front Group. They stand for freedom of speech? They stand for freedom of anything? Are you crazy? They stand for freedom of Sharia law. That's what they stand for. And you better stand up for America, I say to you, before it's too late. And you're on your knee, then listen on.
Now, the same special interests that would profit from the other side's agenda fighting back hard. You know, to win this election, they are plowing tens of millions of dollars through front.
Can you believe this guy?
They're running misleading negative ads.
Can you believe Pinocchio, whose money came from Saudi Arabia and George Soros and bundled money we don't know where from? He's talking about Republicans getting foreign money. Pinocchio Obama. Yeah, make it a bumper sticker. Every time I say something, somebody makes a bumper sticker and sells it. I never saw anything like it. Pinocchio Obama. Go ahead. Take it and run with it. Put the nose on it. Put the nose on it. God, what do I care? Pinocchio Obama. What do I care? Run with it. Steal it. Steal his bumper sticker. Tom in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation from Warland. W-O-R, welcome. What's on your mind?
Well, Michael, I just wanted to tell you, I commute from Manhattan to Connecticut, and I was on the train last night, and on my iPad, I'm reading your book, which is amazing, and the guy next to me, you could see he's agitated that I'm reading the book, and he pulls up on his iPad, I mean, his little iPod, a famous leftist movie, and holds it there to show me, so he could see that, you know, look at what he's watching. And just
so he was offended that you were reading Trickle Up Poverty? That bothered him?
Yes, yes. And he
you know, I have a friend here in San Francisco who was on a bus going downtown today, and he said as he was reading my book on the bus, a woman next to him got agitated and started to yell at him and told him how dare he read the book. Can you believe this? Look, I've told you that fascism is now fashionable amongst the radical left. You know that, don't you?
Yeah.
They become emboldened because of Obama into thinking that they could tell you not to read a certain book.
Yes, absolutely.
Tom, it's unbelievable. I wish everyone listening here had the guts you have. I'm sending you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty to give away to your favorite liberal friend in Connecticut for Halloween. Stay on the line. Pennsylvania, Karen, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, I just wanted to speak about the Juan Williams case. I'm an intern in one of the member stations of NPR, and I volunteered yesterday to take the callers for our fund drive, and we just had an unbelievable amount of people complaining about Juan Williams, and I actually had a guy who he has a house in Pennsylvania and lives in New York. He said he was a writer. He never identified himself, but he had said that we were, as a station, as NPR, we were effectively giving away everything to the bad people, or so much he meant the Republicans before the midterm elections. And it was just incredible, all the amount of people.
Wait, what does he mean by giving it away? By firing Juan Williams, you gave it away to the Republicans?
Effectively, what he meant is that we were giving bad press to a liberal media station. And that's
What do you mean you're giving bad press? Your president, Vivian Schiller, showed her Soviet instincts.
Yeah, I'm a college intern, so I mean, I'm just looking to make my way through, but they were...
No, but do you understand what you're saying and what you're telling me the man said?
Yeah,
You're not giving anybody anything except the truth. We're seeing, not for the first time, but now America can see clearly who Vivian Schiller and NPR are. Don't you get it?
Yeah, I agree completely.
Now, what would happen if you, as an intern at NPR, I'm sending you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. What if you brought that to work? Would you lose your job? In one day, you'd be fired. Do you know that?
Yeah, I mean, I told them I was real with my cover letter and everything with my resume. I said, I've listened to talk radio since I was a kid. I grew up with NPR and talk radio the same. My parents, you know, we're trying to be conservatives, but, you know, I like to listen to both sides of the story. I think as an you should be an intellectual person. You should be able to discern for yourself.
And so, what happened? They hired you anyway?
They hired me, even though I said I'd listen to talk.
Well, you know, let me say this. Maybe one day you'll be president of NPR, and it'll be a more fairly balanced organization than now under this left-wing harridan, Vivian Schiller. Stay on the line. A free copy of TUP going out to you. Russian studies, Soviet studies. Then works for Turner Broadcasting. Then CNN, then the New York Times, and now NPR. And you're surprised that she'd fire the 40-watt bulb, Juan Williams? Look, to be honest with you, the guy was always a nonentity. He was always a bumbling nonentity. But that's not the point. Even a bumbling nonentity, they wanted to control what he said. That's all. What else do you want to know? I need a little music break here in the middle of talking. Not that anything's wrong. It's Friday. Give people a break. Some kind of rock and roll. Nah, that's a little maudlin. It's maudlin. It's no heavenly shades of night. Give them something upbeat for a Friday. I don't know. Where are people going tonight? Where do normal people go on a Friday night? I go nowhere. I learned my lesson yesterday with the ball game to stay home with the dog. Because the truth is, I don't know, there's not much out there that I like. All right, I like the bay. I like to look at the seals and the birds. It's true. I have more in common with them than I do with people at this point in my life. Not exactly that I'm anti-people. It's just that at a certain point, there's some beauty in animals. Oh, where's that animal story about what they're doing to the bears up here? Oh, I promised the Humane Society of America I would speak out about to stop the Nevada bear hunt. You're not going to believe this story. The Nevada Wildlife Commission has proposed allowing the trophy hunting of black bears for the first time in Nevada history. If permitted, this trophy hunt would last over 6 months, including in the spring, leaving orphan cubs unable to survive alone and allowing hunters to send packs of dogs with radio collars to chase bears up trees and then shoot them point blank. With a relatively small and stable population of bears in the area, the Nevada Wildlife Commission has demonstrated no need to initiate a black bear trophy hunt. Please take just a minute to submit your comments to the members of the Nevada Wildlife Commission, as well as the Nevada Department of Wildlife, expressing your opinion, your opposition to a black bear trophy hunt in Nevada. Let's stop the hunt before it starts. Wayne Purcell, President and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States. 100% right. If you ever heard a bear crying when he is caught by a pack of dogs and the cheap, cowardly hunters approach him to execute him, you'd be on the side of the Humane Society. And that's right, you heard me say that. The cheap, cowardly hunters go there with high-powered rifles and scopes and hunt down this poor animal that hurt nobody. Now, the reason they're killing them is because they're cowards and they can't kill people. That's number one. I really don't care if you don't like what I'm saying. It does not matter to me. Do you understand that? I care more about the animals than my listenership right now. What's going on in Nevada is going on throughout the West right now, maybe even in the East. You've got some bad bears who are coming down and they're lazy like liberals and they're living off the garbage. They don't want to work. They don't want to pick flowers. They don't want to go for honey. They want to just get the garbage out of the can the same way your liberal neighbors do. They want everything for nothing, like Freddie and Fannie. They want to free this and a government check. You know, send me my government check, you know, rub my belly. So they're just like that. They're the bad bears. And who's getting punished? The wild bears they want to hunt and kill and chase up trees with a pack of vicious dogs that bite them and tear them to ribbons and leave the orphan cubs crying in the wilderness, who become nothing but food for the other predators. I am totally opposed to the bear hunt. If this surprises you, you can go to hell.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Wonder who
wrote the book of love. Chapter 1 says the lover, you love her with all your heart. Chapter 2, you tell her, you never, 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 ever gonna part. In Chapter 3, remember the meaning of romance.
I turned it off already. I'm not in the mood. I don't know. It sounded good when I thought of it. Kill It's Friday. Hello, welcome. How are you? I hope you're doing well. Have a nice weekend. The show's not over. How you doing? So far, we gave away who the Soviet is behind NPR and her background at CNN. And before that, at Turner. And before that, in Soviet studies. And before that, the parents with the oil cloth, with the red diaper dopa baby brainwashing in the house that she should become up a good Soviet operative. And there she is at NPR. And she fires Mr. Milquetoast, who's suddenly a martyr. On his best day, after three meals of fish, the guy is a 60 water. But all right, so Fox gave him two mil for 3 years, allegedly. Good luck to him. I don't care. So he'll join the other 60-watt bulbs on Fox News. Boom. Rim shot. Here are five books for the holidays. Rules for Safe Hunting by Dick Cheney. Come on, guys. Give me the... Let's start again. Five books for you not to buy for the holidays. Rules for Safe Hunting by Dick Cheney. Openness in Politics by Barack Obama. How to Hammer Through Honest Bills by Nancy Pelosi. Growing Sweet Potatoes. A Viewer's Guide to Boardwalk Empire by Rahm Emanuel. I wrote those during the break to show you what an active mind is. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. It's Friday. Should I burn myself out and tell you anything? Eat myself up, tell you about this and that? Should I? What do you want? News, views, reviews, Bible, hunting, not hunting, how to fly fish in Bolivia, whatever. I'm open for business. It's open mic to mic. You could even tell me how you can call me about the baseball that I try to go to and sat through two innings. Mainly it was so boring I didn't know what to do with myself. You know, there's a certain, I felt as though I was like Gulliver's Travels, like Brobdingnag. I felt as though I went to Brobdingnag and I was looking at a strange species of people and what they're interested in. I was actually scratching my inner head watching people get so excited over a pitcher's every gesture and the chewing and the this. There's a ritual to baseball that's very interesting. You know how they look and this and the glance and rubbing this and touching that. And of course the skill is amazing. I couldn't do it. I'm not knocking the skill. You got to be a fool to say that. You certainly recognize the supreme abilities of any professional athlete. It's the very same thing with talk radio. It's the one thing I noticed, which is that the great athletes are like great entertainers or great performers in anything. They're in a class by themselves. I mean, anyone can play baseball, right? Not everyone can be a professional ball player. Anyone can talk. Anyone can go up in front of a microphone. But not everyone can do it the way a professional talk show host does it. So, you know, it's an interesting thing to watch. However, it is very slow. It takes, and that unto itself, I understand people like to slow themselves down. But all I could be thinking about while watching the people with the orange confetti and the screaming and the yelling was, we have a nation that is being taken over by communists. We have an incompetent communist president. We have a corrupt Congress. We have enemies within and enemies outside the country. We have Obama trying to destroy the military, to destroy the NASA, take it down, end manned space flights. And here they are cheering about some yokel with a baseball in his hand. I mean, that's all I could think about is that how do you reach these people, I said. And then I thought about it. I said, don't get so excited in the stadium yesterday watching the Phillies versus the Giants. I said to myself, do you realize there's 45,000 people in this stadium, which is awesome. Pretty overwhelming, right? And I said, could you get up in front of that crowd and give a speech? I said, of course I could. Not here, not this crowd. It'd have to be my crowd that I invited to a stadium. I could do it. I could have them on the edge of their seats. They'd be cheering. I said, but do you realize that on your radio show right now with over 310 stations, you know what your average quarter hour is? I said to myself, it's actually bigger than this stadium. On an average rotating basis, on an average quarter hour, you have many stadiums like this filled with listeners. But you see, you don't know it. And that's both a plus and a minus in talk radio. So you're able to say things that you wouldn't be able to say in front of a live crowd of that size. On the other hand, you say things you maybe shouldn't say. you know what I'm saying? You might be a little more careful in what you say if you're in front of a live audience of 150,000 people or whatever. You understand this? Well, I don't know. It's very hard to do both at once. You can lose your balance. That's all I can tell you. But luckily, thus far, I haven't had to go to the Mormons with you. I understand that if you read the Bible, as some profess to do but don't, that hysterical blindness and hysterical voice loss is a product of lying. I couldn't find it exactly in the book somewhere, but there is actually an illness that's described in the Bible where a man loseth his voice if he tell too many lieth. No matter how many blackboardeth one haseth, one is full of swift young camel dung. If one is full of swift young camel dung. Let's go to the callers. Bobby in New York on you're up on WGY up there in Albany. Welcome to the program. Go ahead, please, Bobby.
Dr. Bobby. Savage?
Oh, you're on WOR. Go ahead, Bobby.
That's right, doctor. I just wanted to say I was happy to hear you went to the game. Someone in your family went and got the 7 tickets. And I listened.
He got 10 tickets. He had to pay $1,000 apiece for them. 2 days before, he had to pay $1,000. But they were worth more when we got there. People were like, there were hundreds of people. They were paying $300 for standing room.
But I'm glad, because family is so important. I listen to you every night, and my family thinks I'm crazy.
No, it is important, but I don't know. Is the family embarrassed that I left early? I don't even know. I was afraid to ask them today. Nah, it was like nothing happened. They expected me to leave. They were shocked on their Blackberries when I got home within the hour, and I said, home safely with dogs. They said, how did you get home so fast? How? When you want to get somewhere, believe me, you can get there.
I'll be voting on Tuesday in 2 weeks, and I'll have Tup underneath my arm.
Are you bringing Tup into the booth?
I certainly am. I'm pretty charged about doing that. I vote every year, and I can't wait to vote.
I'm sending you another copy to give to your liberal in-laws at the next holiday dinner. Stay on the line, 1-800-449-18. It's not in airports. That's what I'm getting reports from my son. It wasn't in Burbank. It wasn't in Oakland. The libs own the bookstores at some of these airports, and they're hiding it. In that day, a man shall cast away his idols of silver and his idols of gold, which they made for themselves to worship, to the moles and to the bats. All right, what does that mean? Who's going to throw away gold and silver? I'm still trying to accumulate gold and silver. Why should I throw it away? I'm too young yet to get rid of it. Or I was reading something that's very interesting to show you how compassionate the Bible is. Conservatives don't realize this, but it's filled with messages that you're supposed to take care of the poor. You're supposed to feed the poor. Did you know that? Make sure they don't go hungry. You didn't know about that. It's all in there. Many people don't know that there's a lot of liberal messaging in the Bible as well. Don't think it's all, hellfire and brimstone. It is. There's a lot of it in there. But you mustn't lose your humanity along the way. You have to remember that there are less lucky people than you, and they need you to take care of them. Otherwise, what are you going to become? You'll become like a Hitler. That's the whole point of the Bible, is that if you lose your compassion, well, Jesus said it best. What does it profit a man if he gaineth the world and loseth his soul? I mean, no one said it better than that, right? What was that all about? So it's Friday. You have to do a little bit of this. It's about compassion. You get that what? You get that what? You have to have a little compassion, because without it, what do you become? A monster. You become Babylonian in your monstrosity. And they that harass Judah shall be cut off. You know, I was reading the Bible on what's going to happen with Israel and Persia. Guess who wins? Let me ask you something. Do you think that because Persia is lining up with certain folks in Mesopotamia and certain folks in South America and certain people in China and certain people in Russia, do you actually think that Israel is going to disappear off the earth? Because I don't. I have almost a blind faith that at the end of days, although there will be seas of blood, Israel will prevail. It's been tried before. And every time evil has tried to destroy the Jewish people, it was the evil ones who wound up destroying themselves. Now you say, well, that was then, that was before nuclear war, you know. That was before nuclear weapons. And I'm really afraid that Israel's going to be wiped off the earth. Well, you should be afraid, considering we have ninnies running America who are on the side of the enemies, not only of Israel, but of our own survival. Yeah, you should be very afraid whether we can save ourselves from the wicked left prior to the year 2012. There's no question it'll be 25 to 75 of them thrown in their cans in 10 days. No question about it. But do you think that's going to stop the idol worshippers of Hollywood from their agenda? You know it's not going to stop the fashionable fascists. You know it. And how are you going to stop this young man, okay, named Harry Reid? How are you going to stop him? How are you going to stop this wild man, Harry Reid, who thinks he saved the world? Listen to this one.
We were at the top, and we have fallen very hard. So people have been hurting, and I understand that. And it doesn't give them comfort or solace for me to tell them, but for me, we'd be in a worldwide depression. They want to know what I have done for them.
But were it not for me, there'd be a worldwide depression. I don't know, but Sharon Angle doesn't have much of a job ahead of her. I just never heard anything like this. For the rich men thereof are full of violence, and the inhabitants thereof have spoken lies, and their tongue is deceitful in their mouth. Ooh. Does this define you, what I'm about to read to you? Thou shalt eat, but not be satisfied, and thy sickness shall be in thine inward parts. And thou shalt conceive, but thou shalt not bring forth. You know, that defines a lot of what's wrong with America today. We eat, but we're not satisfied, so we have to go to idiotic restaurants where they put absurd combinations to attract your attention. But the food stinks. And although you may be outwardly healthy and have abs, and you run and you look healthy, inside you're rotting. Your soul is rotting. And why is there so much sterility in the United States of America? Thou shalt conceive, but shalt not bring forth. Ooh, that's pretty amazing. It's almost like biblical in its way. And the godly man has perished out of the earth, and the upright among men is no more. I'm not better than you. I'm the same as you. The same as you. Absolutely the same as you. I'm just reading you stuff written by better people than me. I have to read it once in a while to keep myself sane, to realize I'm just like you. Now, here's something I have to read to you because I think it's newsworthy. It's from Zechariah. This is where I think he predicts a nuclear war and where the Bible predicts what happens. And it's against the people who are trying to smite Jerusalem. And before I go into this, don't think I'm a great supporter of every Jew in Israel or that I love every Israeli. Because I've said this before, I've never met an Israeli I liked. I got to say, I mean, up front, I like Israel conceptually, but I don't like Israelis. It's not that I don't like them on purpose, but they have to be. They come from a very tough neighborhood. They're like Jewish people from Brooklyn from the 1930s. Like if you're trying to get on a bus with them, they'll give you the elbow and throw you off. But they have to be because they're around worse people than themselves. So here's what the Bible says in Zechariah. It says, "And this shall be the plague wherewith the Lord will smite all the peoples that have warred against Jerusalem. Their flesh shall consume away while they stand upon their feet, and their eyes shall consume away in their sockets, and their tongue shall consume away in their mouth." If that is not a description of nuclear holocaust upon Iran and upon the enemies of the Jews, I'd like to know what is. "And it shall come to pass in that day that a great tumult from the Lord shall be among them." This is amazing to me. "And Judah also shall fight against Jerusalem. And the wealth of all the nations around about shall be gathered together. And so shall be the plague of the horse, of the mule, of the camel, and of the ass, and of all the beasts that shall be in their camps as this plague." But the main thing I'm trying to tell you is that it's been predicted or prophesied in the Bible, for those of you who still believe in the Bible, and I'm one of them. I'm not a biblical absolutist, but "that shall be the plague wherewith the Lord will smite the peoples of war against Jerusalem. Their flesh shall consume away while they stand upon their feet, and their eyes shall consume away in their sockets, and their tongue shall consume away in their mouth." That is a warning to the man in elevator shoes from Tehran and to every Iranian out there that he is playing with fire, and fire he shall have, not from me, but from God himself. No, I can't take a break. You got to give me one more second. It leads right back to Obama and his war on our military, his desire to destroy our nuclear stockpile, his melting down of NASA. He is playing with the enemy, not with America. It's all in trickle-up poverty. Read it.
Savage.
Oh, life could be a dream if I could take you up in paradise.
All right, that's enough. I don't know. I got a headache from the ball game. Portland, Cheryl, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. I went into a Borders to look for your book the day after it came out, and when they went to look for it for me, they called a security guard, and he came and stood about 10 feet away at me and glared at me the whole time I waited.
They called security when you asked for my book?
Yes, sir.
Why? Are you intimidating?
I must be. But
well, what do you look like? How tall are you?
5'10".
And what do you carry something that intimidates people that would have had the lib clerk call security?
I guess just the Savage Nation.
And Cheryl, what did the security guard do? Did he glower at you?
Glared at me the whole time. And
all right, I want to tell. Okay, because we're sending that on to the publisher who will call Borders, and we'll see if we can get you some justice. I'm sending you a free copy of Top, okay? End of story. Unbelievable. What did I say today? Liberal fascism, you've heard of, right? I asked another question. Is fascism fashionable? Yes, it is. Yes, it is. We're living in very dangerous times where fascism is becoming not only the norm, but fashionable, especially fashionable amongst the government media complex. I don't exist, right? I'm banned in Britain. No one mentions it. But a 40-watt bulb gets thrown off NPR and suddenly it's international news.
Savage.
I got a whole lot of love for you. True, true love for you. I got a whole lot of love for you. I got a whole lot of for you.
My favorite crooner. Fats is Fats Domino, isn't it? I hope so. It is. Fats is the best. Hope he listens to the show down in New Orleans. I would think he would love the show. Thank you for listening. Anyway, here we are. Here we are. Look what's going on in my country. Look what's going on. All of these ninnies, these left-wing fascists posing as harbingers of freedom. You got the drug addicts on HBO from Sunset Boulevard, Drunken Days, marching around like he's a genius. You got the putz whose book is number one, who didn't write it, obviously. Obama's going on his show to keep the book there to make sure that everyone thinks that liberals are still popular. It's amazing, the country, the government media complex, how incredibly difficult it is to break through this barrier. Back in 1998, I gave a speech before the Commonwealth Club entitled Beware the Government Media Complex. You're in for some treat right now because you've stayed with me all week and you didn't know this would come on a Friday night if you're on the East Coast this time of the day. But I have a piece of this speech that you're going to feel like, was this guy prophetic or what? I want you to listen to this. Remember now, 1998, Commonwealth Club. And what's interesting is that NPR normally carries speeches before the Commonwealth Club. But even before this Soviet fellow traveler took over NPR, the commies who were running NPR refused to carry Michael Savage's speech before the Commonwealth Club, called Beware the Government Media Complex. Listen now.
Beware the Government Media Complex. I hope to prove to you over the next period of time that perhaps never before in American history has there been so cozy a relationship. And this, by the way, transcends right or left, has nothing to do with race, has nothing to do with politics. It has everything to do with press freedom. And I want to state that from the outset. I believe that today we have a relationship that is too cozy between government and media. Many of the speeches that are given before the Commonwealth Club, many of them, are picked up and rebroadcast by the local NPR radio station. Do you see any NPR people here? No. Many of the speeches given before the Commonwealth Club are transmitted on C-SPAN, which is paid for by the cable company. Do you see any C-SPAN cameras here? Beware the government media complex. You know, the media, ladies and gentlemen, as you well know, is needed by you and by me, by the public, very badly needed, to be and to remain a thorn in the side of the government. In order to keep the government relatively honest, you need a media that's constantly poking at them. However, when the media instead becomes a thorn in the side of the skeptical private citizen, the media then becomes an arm of the government. Beware the government media complex. When agitators for the homeless riot, when they burn trash cans, they break the law, but they're held up as freedom fighters for the poor by the left-leaning press. But if one compassionate conservative dares to speak out, he's condemned to the gulag of media silence, the gulag of media exile. This startling bias in the media is more threatening to the pillars of our republic than even the most ardent conservative might believe. It is censorship by default as well. What do I mean by censorship by default? Where the commercial interests of the media moguls are so intertwined with government policy as to create an overly friendly image of government officials and their policies. So it may not be as clear as a conspiracy to bias the news, but it comes out to be the same thing anyway. Now, this bias is not limited to the left. It is largely a product of left-wing bias when it comes to certain social issues such as affirmative action or gay rights. But the right also biases the news when it wants to shade fiscal issues to their benefit. Example, Rupert Murdoch and the China scandal. I first began this file on the government media complex about 3 years ago. I noticed an alarming bias occurring, and I knew that without correction, this could sink the ship of truth. Now, surely other administrations have had their friends in high media places, but still, there were many voices and many views of dissent which found their way into the national media. But now we have a growing media blackout of some serious crimes and misdemeanors, all unsolved to the satisfaction of those with critical powers of reason. Which events am I referring to? To the minds of many Americans. Waco, where 80 innocent men, women, and children were burned to death.
I'm going to stop because this was from 1998, and it was all pointed at the crimes of the Clinton administration, which have been swept under the rug, where he has rehabilitated his image with help, again, from hundreds of millions of dollars of advertising. They have swept away Bill Clinton's past to the point now where he's more popular than many current politicians. So there it is. Beware the government media complex. It was quite prophetic. It was right on the money. What can I tell you? I'm pretty much in agreement with what I said then. I didn't hear anything I just heard that I disagree with. I've gone way past the government media complex. What's interesting to me, though, is that I talked about the media gulag. I didn't realize I was talking about myself today in the year 2010. Today, an article came out by Michael Werbowski from the Digital Journal, an open letter to the Savage Nation, where he writes, "Dear Dr. Savage, if you recall, I wrote a letter posted on Digital Journal a while ago, appealing to the newly elected British PM to remove your name from a list which prevents you from traveling overseas to the UK. Unfortunately, the scurrilous and unjustified ban remains in place. But since I made my appeal, much has changed. The multicultural doctrine is unraveling. Those who are familiar with your radio show know this concept is not something you highly value. Recently in Europe, some powerful allies have taken your side in agreement on the issue. The ideology of multiculturalism has fallen out of favor with the men and women in power. It is being questioned and repudiated overseas." And he goes, "I can't read you every word." And he's talking about how multiculturalism is fragmenting across Europe. Even Merkel said it the other day. "Multiculturalism has created an a la carte sense of citizenship or national belonging. Meanwhile, although Britain remains steadfastly committed to this live and let live policy of integration, the liberal conservative coalition governments has enacted draconian spending cuts not seen in the post-war era, which may wipe out the middle class in that country. Hence, in these very difficult economic times, it remains to be seen for how long the multicultural muftis will hold sway over government's policies as jobs disappear and borders are overrun with refugees fleeing places that the West is at war with, such as Afghanistan, Pakistan, etc., and other yet to be pacified, non-compliant third world states which don't submit to the dictates of the New World Order. Undoubtedly and regretfully, as job cuts sink in and unemployment rises, so will xenophobia. Your dictum of borders, language, and culture will catch on here and there and possibly become the vote-getter at election time. And I don't mean in a demagogic sense, but simply out of realism. These precepts are perhaps not a panacea, and the politically correct Marxists may announce anyone like you who espouses such firebrand conservative views, which in my own view are simply non-ideological, beyond left and right, just simply based on common sense. I say to them this," he writes, "no borders, no unifying language, and a nation without a dominant or common culture will perish, and with it, the Western world as we know it." Now, there's more to this article, and I'm going to just summarize it. It's up on michaelsavage.com. He says, which brings me to your new book, Trickle Up Poverty, Stopping Obama's Attack on Our Borders, Economy, and Security. I have not read your book yet, as it is not available here in Canada or in Europe either. But from what I have heard, such as reviews and read about it, it has already undeniably struck a chord with many and thereby possibly reflects the views of countless middle-class voters. I can't agree with you more when you say it, that it is the middle class is shrinking under Obama in your country. But this disturbing trend seems to be taking place not only in America, but in all industrialized democracies as well. The middle class is under siege and is being assaulted, that is, mugged at gunpoint, by the banksters or billionaire brigands living off the taxpayers' incomes on a massive scale. The ongoing implosion of the middle class is the greatest threat to our nation's security and to the stability of our democracies. And, you know, he goes on, it's very well written. Hence, it appears that we're all in a deep fix. By we, I am not including the Warren Buffetts, Soroses, or Richard Bransons of the world, as these men do not seem to have any answers to get America working again, nor do they seem to know how to put your country or any other aging, sclerotic, established democracy on the right track or in the right direction towards sustained recovery. Your book might not have all the answers either, but I'm sure it is well-written, captivating, and worth reading and reflecting upon its unorthodox to some ideas. Now, I want to summarize the end of this article. This is good. You're, in my opinion, the Voltaire who fled the French king's persecution to find refuge in Her Majesty's kingdom. You are the Voltaire of our times, and your views can't be and shall not be silenced. Your opinions, however inconvenient they may be to some, only resonate louder among the populace as financiers and their paid-off tyrannical stooges, cronies, politicians who rule over us try to suppress all dissenting views not favorable to globalist elites' interests. I can only wish you much luck with the book in the future, and perhaps if reason triumphs over outdated political ideologies in Britain, we can share a chat and a pint in a London pub one day. Michael Wrobowski, digital journalist on michaelsavage.com. It's beautifully written, very beautifully written. And so I take you back to the opening. What do Michael Savage and Juan Williams have in common? Answer, everything and nothing. And now we turn to this. We now turn to this very important soundbite. You're now going to hear the voice of the Soviet fellow traveler on NPR. In my opinion, a Soviet fellow traveler, the woman who fired him, which doesn't shock me. Remember who he is. He's been a lifetime leftist. Juan Williams has always been a sort of a dim bulb, lifetime leftist, fellow traveler, glorified Malcolm X, glorified the whole Black Power movement in his early days. And yet that was not good enough. That was not good enough for NPR because he hadn't gone along with the new movement. The new movement is what? The new movement is to bow down to Islam. Islam is the sacred cow, no longer, may I say it, the American black. The American black has been trumped by a religion. And although we are told to bear, not only beware the government media complex, but the separation of church and state should be prevalent in a democracy, we now listen to the NPR president and CEO, none other than Vivian Schiller, in clips 8, 9, and 10.
He has been a frequent contributor to Fox News. That's fine. We don't necessarily have an issue with that. However, we expect anybody that appears on our air, either as a journalist or a news analyst, to conduct themselves according to our journalistic rules of ethics, wherever they might be. There have been several incidences over the years where Juan has strayed from that line, and we've had discussions with him. We have asked him not to do it again. This is not the first time, quite honestly. But we made a decision that really, quite honestly, at this point, after several cases of him veering from those journalistic ethics,
Nazi fascist,
case we decided that his integrity as a news analyst has been undermined by
integrity.
The fact that he has expressed
you petty
these
fascist in a quinoline.
Views. This is not
you're a fascist in a crinoline.
His comments. This is not a debate. You know, Juan feels
of course not.
The way he feels. That is not for me to pass judgment on. That is really his feelings that he expressed on Fox News are really between him and his, you know, psychiatrist or his publicist or take your pick. But it's
oh, just
not
shut
compatible
up.
With
just music. Shut up. You couldn't get a job today in the real marketplace if you tried, you Soviet you. Now, Vivian Schiller is the CEO of NPR. You just heard her disgusting self-declaratory idiocy, where she says this is not a debate. Of course it isn't a debate. In the Soviet Union, there were no debates. When a commissar made a decision, heads would roll. When Madame Defarge made decisions, heads roll. So Vivian Schiller is no different. So who is Vivian Schiller, the NPR president, living off the largesse of others? Vivian Schiller came from where? New York Times, where she ran their website. And before that, Vivian Schiller was senior VP at CNN Productions. And before that, Schiller was where? Why, Schiller was a Russian interpreter in the former Soviet Union, which led her to documentary work for Ted Turner Broadcasting. And before that, Ms. Schiller graduated from Cornell U with a bachelor's in Russian studies and Soviet studies, emphasis on Soviet, and then a master's degree in Russian from Middlebury College. Now, unto itself, getting a master's in Russian, I have a PhD, so I'm not an anti-intellectual in that regard, or even studying the Soviet Union is unto itself not questionable. But when you see the end line of this studying resulting in a Soviet-style management, then you understand that she has always been somewhat fascinated by the Soviet-era bureaucrats, and she's become one of them herself in this man's analysis. And such an individual has no place at NPR. In fact, those good-minded liberals listening to this show, many of you listen, and I know it. Many of you listen to hear an educated voice on the other side, and I know I've become that for most of my liberal listeners. Maybe I've changed some of your minds on some thing. I don't know, nor do I care. All I know is I give you an honest opinion and try to back it up with my facts and whatever I have to do to get you to listen to me. I'm going to ask you if you think that she should continue to be supported by you. If the answer is no, don't call the show because I don't want to hear from you. I want you to not send that $25 check. I want you to not send that $100 check. I want you to take that NPR fundraising envelope and send it back at their expense and say no, not until you fire Vivian Schiller. That's what I do. When I was getting Republican fundraising brochures for the last 2 years, to spite them, I would send it back at their cost on those prepaid envelopes and say, no, not until you do this and not until you do that. I did it for years, make them pay for their mistakes. So now we see a whole tide in another direction. I've made my point. It's one man's opinion. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to some of the callers. Sacramento, California. Jeremy, go ahead, please.
Yes, I bought your book. I didn't have a problem buying it because I ordered it online, but my in-laws saw it and told me that I was crazy and I shouldn't let you persuade me in any.
Well, have they read the book or they just know you shouldn't read the book?
No, they just said I shouldn't read the book, but of course.
Well, why? Is it something, you mean you can't read and you can't discuss ideas in your family?
No, I choose not to because I don't want to get into it with them. But
no, I understand. I'm not telling you to lose your family because you listen to this show. But are they that small-minded? Are they people who don't read anything?
No, I'm sure they read, but like I said, they don't like me listening to you. They don't want.
Well, I guess they belong listening to national Soviet radio. Jeremy, I'm sending you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty to give to your in-laws. I'll be right back.
Come along and be my hearty doll. Come along and be my hearty doll. Come along and be my hearty doll. I'll make love to you, I'll make love to you. Well, I saw a gal.
In the year September 30th, 2009, NPR reported $149 million in revenues and $167 million in expenses. You notice how the leftists never report a profit. Now, how could a Soviet front group like NPR have $150 million in revenues and spend $17 million more in expenses? Where'd the money go? How many pockets are being stuffed behind the scenes? How many nieces and nephews and in-laws are getting any of that NPR money for front groups that they run to provide so-called services to NPR? Why is it that you're allowed to read that Soros can give $1.8 million to NPR to hire 100 communist reporters, and that the Republicans are worthless when it comes to stopping this man, who is the greatest threat to our freedom that this nation has ever seen? Shall I repeat that in case you missed it? Perhaps the most dangerous man in the history of the world is George Soros. Certainly he's the most dangerous man in the history of democracy, because although he says he funds democracies, he actually funds the opposite of democracies. George Soros is who gave us Obama, as I point out in my analysis in Trickle Up Poverty. That you know, you figure that's true. It's now George Soros who tells the NPR Soviet hack to fire a dimwit bulb who dared stray from the party line, from the commissar's party line. However, he strayed, he had to go, his head had to roll. And yet you see that $160 million they get in, and they spent $150 and $170 they spend. Again, I want to implore you, if you're going to buy Trickle Up Poverty for Christmas, do it today or tomorrow. The book has to go to number one in order to beat Pinhead, in order to beat the comedian. Otherwise, Obama wins.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. The big story today is the firing of a liberal mouthpiece by a liberal. This is exactly what happens after a communist revolution when they eat their own. Fidel Castro arrested and executed many of his cohorts. The early Soviets, after the revolution, arrested and executed many of their cohorts. So to see this fellow Juan Williams fired by NPR is not really that shocking to me. And the question is, what do Michael Savage and Juan Williams have in common? The answer is everything and nothing. Juan Williams is a tepid, milquetoast who really stands for nothing. But he's a nice enough guy. Nevertheless, he was fired by NPR for making a rather innocuous comment about Muslims. Without any meeting with him, no trial, no checks and balances, the liberal fascist at NPR cut off his head. Instantly, the blogosphere and the media went into overdrive to defend Mr. Williams and attack the liberal fascists at NPR, and rightly so. Now, let me take you back 2 years. A member of the American media, Michael Savage, was banned by a Western democracy from entering their nation on false allegations and false charges. Moreover, his reputation was permanently smeared by linking him with murderers and terrorists. His free speech was assaulted. His freedom of travel was assaulted. Almost no American journalist went to his defense. Why? Beware the government media complex, warned Michael Savage in 1998 at a seminal speech before the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco. We are living in extremely dangerous times where fascism is becoming not only the norm, but fashionable. Is fascism now fashionable? Yes, amongst the fascist left and amongst the government media complex. Though those who attacked NPR for firing Juan Williams were right to do so, Williams is basically just another member of the government media complex, and as such, the media is defending him. He is a member of their club. I, Michael Savage, am an outsider, so they refuse to even acknowledge me. To them, I don't exist, but that doesn't matter. I have made it to the top as an outsider. Trickle-up poverty has succeeded in spite of them, and the Obama regime will understand this, as will the Republicans. The fact of the matter is Fox News has become an arm of the Republican Party, and they are suffering under the illusion that they can continue to operate as an arm of the Republican Party without paying the consequences. I believe that the Tea Party members are aware of the fact that although Fox News does some excellent work, they cannot continue to be a mouthpiece for the Republican Party. This is Michael Savage. Is fascism fashionable? I'm afraid yes, amongst the radical left. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. There are other big stories. Let's look a little more deeply into the biography of the president of NPR. Her name, Vivian Schiller. Now, many of you don't even know who she is. She joined NPR as president and CEO in January of 2009.
He has been a frequent contributor to Fox News. That's fine. We don't necessarily have an issue with that. However, we expect anybody that appears on our air, either as a journalist or a news analyst, to conduct themselves according to our journalistic rules of ethics, wherever they might be.
This woman leads all NPR's worldwide media operations, if you can believe this. Where did she come from? You're not going to be surprised by this. I'm the only one who did my homework. Prior to joining NPR, old Vivian Schiller served at the New York Times Company as senior VP and general manager of NewYorkTimes.com. Schiller led the day-to-day operations of NewYorkTimes.com. Do you hear this? The largest newspaper website on the internet. So in other words, she has a long history amongst the liberal fascist establishment. Why do I say it? Because prior to the NYT, Schiller served as senior VP of CNN Productions, where she led CNN's long-form programming efforts. What does that mean? Well, take a look at CNN, and you'll know what that means. But where did she go to school, and what did she major in? Well, Ms. Schiller began her career as a simultaneous Russian interpreter in the former Soviet Union, which led to her documentary production work for Turner Broadcasting. Now, what does that mean? Who is she? Vivian Luisa Schiller was born September 13th, 1961. I don't know. 61. She is the daughter of a former editor at Reader's Digest. She graduated from Cornell University with a bachelor's in Russian studies and Soviet studies, and then got a master's in Russian from Middlebury College. Connect the dots. Russian expert, Soviet expert, Russian interpreter in the Soviet Union, production work at Turner Broadcasting. She goes up to CNN. She goes to the New York Times. She goes to NPR, and she introduces Soviet-style tactics on Juan Williams.
This is not a reflection on his comments. This is not a debate. You know, Juan feels the way he feels. That is not for me to pass judgment on. That is really his feelings that he expressed on Fox News are really between him and his, you know, psychiatrist or his publicist or take your pick.
Are any of you out there surprised by this? I could talk about anything. I think I'm going to talk about Teddy in the restaurant right now. So last night, I had a nice day, by the way. I had lunch in the greasy Chinese restaurant, which I absolutely love because I don't know, it's like part of my life. I go in there strictly to have my lips sticking together and say, why do I eat here every day? I mean, why do I do this once a week? The answer is because it's part of my life, and it hasn't killed me yet, and I enjoy it. All right, so then at the end of the day, it's like a horse going to a stable, or a cow rather goes to a stable at the end of the day on the farm. You know that my father told me, you know, my father was a, did you know my father rode a wagon in this country with a horse on it? He went back so far in time, he told me when he was 13 years old, he actually had a wagon with a horse on it. That's where the word teamster comes from. They actually teamster horses, teams. So anyway, he was a little kid. He had a laundry route with a wagon at 13. And the horse jumped, I don't know, in cobblestone streets. I don't know, it fell off the thing and a spike went through his foot. So now I'll bring you up to today. So like he told me, like cows, at the end of a day, they get tired from the pasture. It's boring. There's no TV in the pasture. There's no cell phones. There's no iPhones, nothing. All day long in the hot sun, grinding up grass. They can't wait for the end of the day to go to the barn. So he says, at the end of the day, they all go to the barn. So at the end of the day yesterday, I went up to North Beach to a certain restaurant I go to, the North Beach restaurant. What did I go there for? I went there for the food and to talk with my friend. I told you that. A couple of my friends will always come over when I give them a call. So I'm sitting outside of the restaurant. I had Teddy with me in the city yesterday. Normally, I don't take him to the city when I go to the... I don't like a small dog in the city. He had just had a bath the night before. This dog cannot pass a bush, a tree, a stump, a post, a garbage can without not only just peeing on it, but rubbing against it. He has like a... Something's wrong with him. So Teddy's listening. So I want to take him to a therapist. The rubbing part. I don't mind the marking that males do, but he rubs. He rubs, rubs, rubs. So right away, within 10 minutes, the bath was ruined. And he starts to smell like, you know, a dog. It was horrible. So we get to the restaurant hours later. I'm sitting outside and talking to my friend who owns the restaurant. We talk about everything. It was one of those gorgeous days in San Francisco that you can almost reach out and want a hug. It wasn't hot. It wasn't cold. It was sunny, but the sun was already falling behind the buildings in a cool and nice breeze off the bay. And I'm sitting outside and I'm having, I don't know, a club soda. Yeah, club soda. I didn't want to drink. And Teddy has a bowl of water and we're talking about everything. Wives and children and the future and illness and mortality and no mortality. And you name it. And laughing the way guys will do when they know each other a long enough time. And just passing the time. So I call up another friend. He comes zipping down on a motor scooter. He sits down. He orders a Spumoni because Lorenzo said, I have many centenarians who eat in this restaurant. I said, what? He said, yes, I have a very high number of people over 100 who eat in my restaurant. So naturally, the question becomes, what do they eat? From a guy like me, some of my happiest moments are chatting with other guys over a cafe table and having a meal, watching people coming in for the night, observing people, sitting alone by myself. I enjoy that. So I'm up in front of the restaurant last night, and I'm chatting away, this and that, about it. So my other friend comes over, this and that, and the dog is there and whatever. We're just having a nice, whatever, all about life. Just the way guys will talk when they really trust each other and know each other. So then I go in for dinner. It's now around, I don't know, early in the evening. The place is packed. I sit down, and I have Teddy with me. So I put Teddy between me and the wall. He sits quietly on the side. He doesn't bark. He's quieter than most people. And I say, can you get him some, how about chicken? I said, fine, chicken, no salt and pepper. So he comes out with a plate of salami. He says, for Teddy. I said, Lorenzo, he can't eat salami. He says, no, it's a gooder for him. I said, don't tell me it's good for him. I'm not him. Next, I order veal piccata. I didn't want any more fish. Okay, when I could get it from California, the calamari, I would eat it. I don't even know where that comes from anymore. Most of it's from whatever. So I get the veal piccata, no butter. I want potatoes, no butter, and I had some vegetable, no butter, blah, 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 no butter. And I can't drink wine anymore. I haven't had wine for years. I get sick every time I drink wine. I know it's like so déclassé. I lived on wine, so I passed the litmus test of Mr. Sophistication years ago. I can't drink it anymore. For like the last 2 years, I cannot drink wine. In the winter, I can drink red wine when it's very cold. Other than that, I drink beer. That's all there is to it. So here I am in this great restaurant drinking Budweiser, great meal. I know the people are, oh, yeah, you know, the $200 bottle, $100 bottle, this bottle, that. Let them enjoy it. Good luck to them. Doesn't matter to me. I'm eating, and all of a sudden, the guy comes up from behind me, and he says, excuse me, sir. He says, are you sure that chain is long enough for your dog? I said, what? So, what do you mean? I said, sure, he's fine. I thought the dog was to my right. I turn around. The dog had jumped up on a chair behind me. At the table behind me that was empty, a two-top, and he's sitting in the chair looking at us over the chair. And I realized what he had done. He wanted more food, and he figured he's a person too. In his mind, he's like us. So he figures if he sits in a chair, someone will serve him. You know, dogs are not stupid when you think about it. He didn't get any more food, by the way, because they'll eat until they die. Dogs, you know, will eat until they drop dead. They're not that smart. You could give a dog food, 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 and they will die. They will not stop eating. I've never seen a dog stop eating. You have to figure out what the dog is eating. Anyway, this is neither here nor there. I'm just telling you yesterday. That's all. Then I went home and went to sleep like everyone else and woke up with a hangover even after two beers. This is Michael Savage.
Savage.
It's been a long time coming. But change has come to America.
Obama has gone from hope and change to fear and loathing. Listen to him speak in Portland, Oregon. He is a once great city that was taken over by left-wingers, mainly from California.
Nationally, if they win this election, the chair of the Republican Campaign Committee promised to pursue the exact same agenda that they did before I took office. No. And we know what this agenda is. I mean, there are no surprises here, unless you've forgotten, unless you're suffering from amnesia. Let's see. We'll cut taxes for millionaires and billionaires. That's part of their agenda. We will cut rules for special interests, including polluters. We'll cut middle-class families loose to fend for themselves. So if you're somebody with a pre-existing condition, can't get health care, tough luck. You're on your own.
Obama is trying to inspire voters with fear, not hope. He's the most divisive president since the Civil War.
Right now, the same special interests that would profit from the other side's agenda, they're fighting back hard. You know, to win this election, they are plowing tens of millions of dollars through front groups. They're running misleading negative ads all across America. And these folks, they don't disclose who the donors are. They've got these innocent-sounding names, you know, Americans for Prosperity or Moms for Motherhood. I made that last one up, but... But you don't know where this money's coming from. It could be insurance companies, Wall Street banks. Could be foreign control corporations. We don't know. This is not just a threat to Democrats. This is a threat to democracy.
They're a threat to democracy? I believe the president is the greatest threat to democracy.
Today we stand in common purpose to take our country back.
To take back our country.
We are going to take our country back.
It's going to be because of you that we take our country back.
To make sure we take our country back.
Are you ready to take our country back?
This is the year we take our country back.
The Dems are threatening to take back the country? Taking it back from who? They're running the country. This is crazy. Who believes this delusion?
We were at the top, and we have fallen very hard. So people have been hurting, and I understand that. And it doesn't give them comfort or solace for me to tell them, but for me, we'd be in a worldwide depression. They want to know what I have done for them.
That's right. Harry Reid has bigger delusions of grandeur than Obama. And Nancy Pelosi? Listen to her.
Let me say, being a representative from California is the greatest honor. To walk on the floor of the House, to be chosen by your constituents to represent them, is the highest honor. To be Speaker is a great privilege. However, I have every anticipation that we will come together in this a similar format as we are now with me as Speaker of the House.
You keep on dreaming, Ms. Pelosi.
Let me say why I believe that it would be very difficult for the Republicans to take over the House of Representatives. Let me tell you right here and now that I would rather be in our position right now than theirs. In order for them to win, they have to win around 38 seats, and we'll win some, so they have to win into the 40s. Our members are battle ready. They've been, many of them have won two elections that were very tough elections. They've won in very difficult districts, but in terms of Democratic numbers.
And how will you do that? By buying ice cream cones for high school students?
They know how to win those elections and communicate with their voters, A. B, when we were full bore in 2006, the war in Iraq, the unpopularity of the president was in the 30s. The president was in the 30s, President Bush. With all of that going for us, with great candidates and the rest, we won 30 seats. For them to win maybe 15 more seats than that is a very tall order.
Well, we'll see if that argument flies, Nancy. I know your family flies on Air Force jets. Hey, Michael Savage here. Trickle Up Poverty is a book that can change the political landscape of America come November. You've heard what people are willing to do to get a hold of Trickle Up Poverty. They go to their bookstores. They demand the book even if a liberal clerk tries to hide it from them. If the store is closed, they wait in their vehicles overnight until the store opens up. People are demanding this bestseller, Trickle Up Poverty, by Michael Savage. Why? Because they want to stop Obama's attack on our borders, economy, and security. They want to read my manifesto for saving the economy and saving America. So go get the inside story. By doing so, you're beating the midstream media at their own game. With Trickle Up Poverty, Michael Savage has shown that without the help of the empty skirts in the so-called conservative media, without the help of the purple gang, without the help of the newspapers, without the help of the government media complex, without any of it, the Savage Nation and talk radio can motivate people to make a number one best-selling book. Buy Trickle Up Poverty at Amazon.com or at your local bookstore or at MichaelSavage.com, but get it.
Call Michael now at 1-800-449-8255.
Savage.
Americans are generally a very tolerant people. Even American-style tolerance has its limits. And I believe millions of Americans have reached theirs unless we take control of the left-wing groups who are abusing the media, the courts, and the church, and the schools, and the police, abusing the military. We Americans will suffer a loss of freedom and liberty because of an authoritarianism that will arise in this country. Yellow journalism were stories that were either exaggerated or didn't exist at all in order to sell the newspaper. So what's really changed? U.S. interrogators flush Holy Quran down toilet. Riots occur, people die. Now they have to retract it. So it's just yellow journalism. The problem is it's no longer just smearing somebody. It's now killing people as a result of yellow journalism. So be very careful in thinking that this is nothing new under the sun. In one way it isn't. In another way, we're living in a different world.
Savage.
This is Michael Savage. I want you to know that freedom of speech is not free. Believe me, courageous radio stations like this one want your advertising dollars to pay their bills and be able to bring you my show and all the others you've come to depend on for the real truth. Talk radio in many ways is America's immune system, but it needs your booster shot. If you're a business, you need to put your money where your heart is. Advertise on this station. And here's the good news. According to Talkers Magazine, ads airing on talk stations like this one generate 2 to 3 times the response from customers than other radio radio formats would generate. Why? Because talk radio listeners support with their dollars the advertisers that support the radio shows that they love. If you're a business, any kind of business, I don't care if you're a roofer, a plumber, advertise in this station. If you're a listener, do business with the businesses that advertise on my show and others on this station. For more information on how you can buy ads in this station or my show, call 877-474-6605. Write it down, 877-474-6605.
Can you imagine a world without children? A world where children don't play, or dream, or imagine?
At St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, we're working every day to find cures for diseases that strike down children. Because we can't imagine a world without children. Can you?
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Call 1-800-931-0800 or log on to stjude.org.
Do you want to experience the full impact of the Michael Savage Show? Become a premium member and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcasts. Now you can take the Michael Savage Show anywhere and listen whenever and wherever you want. Get hooked up with the Michael Savage Show today. Go to www.talkradionetwork.com. That's talkradionetwork.com. Click on Savage's picture and sign up now. Savage.
The best network marketers in the world all desire three things from their new MLM opportunity. Products that dial into an untapped global phenomenon to call on their MLM talents and get the good life fast and to join early so they can quickly enjoy their dreams. Only top MLM professionals can join our new company now. Before we launch, we need top network marketers who can optimize the leads from our radio campaign to an audience of over 30 million. If you are approved, proven MLM professional who has earned six figures and achieved top ranks in other MLM companies, act now. Send a text message to 74499 and type MLM in the body of the message. These elite positions will go fast. Send a text message to 74499 and type MLM in the body of the message. Again, send a text to 74499 and type MLM in the message. Message and data rates may apply.
Dear brothers and sisters, unite and rise up against this hydra-headed monster which calls itself Zionism. The Quran says, drive them out from where they drove you out. There's no question of just removing the settlements. These settlements are only the tentacles of the devil who resides in Tel Aviv.
You just heard Siddiqui, an anti-Semitic, Jew-hating professor of English, calling for the destruction of Israel as a tenured English professor in the United States of America. Eric Stackelback looked into this story, and he joins us now for his update.
Well, Michael, great to be here. And this story has made some waves this week about this college professor, a professor of literature and English at Lincoln University in Pennsylvania, several miles outside of Philadelphia. He is a Pakistani Muslim, but he is, I believe, a naturalized U.S. citizen at this point. He's been at Lincoln University for 25 years, and you just played the clip, Michael, at this rally on September 3rd, a few blocks from where I'm sitting right now, in Washington, D.C., in the shadow of the White House, this college professor, Dr. Siddiqui, took a microphone and publicly called for the destruction of the state of Israel.
This is unbelievable to me.
Unabashedly, no inhibitions by Siddiqui, called for the destruction of Israel. And then he added the caveat, Michael, if possible, by peaceful means.
You can't be serious.
I don't know that there is any peaceful way to dismantle and destroy a country, which is what Siddiqui called for. And he added, perhaps we'll give them enough food and water to travel back to the lands from where they came.
Hmm.
Well, I have news for you. The land where they're from, and they've been from for thousands of years, is the land of Israel.
Exactly.
But that's besides the point. He went on to make just a string of comments, Michael, in this speech that he made in D.C. right here. This was straight out of the Ahmadinejad playbook, the Ahmadinejad Hitler playbook, some of the things he was saying.
Well, like what?
The Quran says, drive them out from where they drove you out, he said. There's no question of just dismantling the settlements, and I'm quoting. He went on to say, these settlements in Israel are only the tentacles of the devil that resides in Tel Aviv. Now, I did a little more research. When I saw this clip, my jaw dropped. I said, this guy's a college professor, a tenured college professor. So I dug in, did more research, and Michael, I found even more.
But what did you find out?
Number one, I learned that for years and years, he's made these genocidal comments calling for the destruction of Israel. This is a long-running pattern. This event on Labor Day weekend wasn't some one-shot deal. But I also found that he is a Holocaust denier. And I have the quotes right here. I uncovered email exchanges online, Michael, posted online by Siddiqui, in which he called the Holocaust a hoax that was invented. And he also said there is, quote, not even one document to prove that the Holocaust happened.
Oh, my God.
And that's not all. In another of his postings online, which I uncovered, he wrote that Jews have, quote, taken over America by devious and immoral means.
Oh, my God.
Now, this is a guy who is a tenured professor, teaches literature to college students at a university, Lincoln University, which has a decent reputation. Look, it's the oldest historically African-American college in the country, been around since the 1800s. Thurgood Marshall, the ex-Supreme Court Justice, I believe, attended Lincoln University. They have a decent reputation. I don't know how their academic standards are, but before this, there hasn't been any major controversy per se. But here's the big hook. Number one, they're employing this guy, this genocidal anti-Semite radical Muslim, who also, by the way, Michael, has supported two convicted terrorists. He's advocated for these people, two convicted terrorists with links to Al-Qaeda.
Well, who's that?
A woman by the name of Afia Siddiqui. She was just convicted last month. Linked to Al-Qaeda, plotting attacks against America, and the notorious blind sheikh, Omar Abdel Rahman. He's the guy behind the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. He's serving life in a supermax prison in Colorado for his connections to Al-Qaeda and his terror plotting against America. And this guy, Siddiqui, this college professor, has advocated for these two people in his writings.
Wait a minute. Why would any university continue to employ this man?
Number one, another thing to remember here, Lincoln University, since 2003, Michael, I found that they have received about $200 million in Pennsylvania state money towards various projects. Now, when I spoke to Lincoln's executive vice president, a guy by the name of Michael Hill, he wouldn't go on camera. None of their administrators would go on camera.
Well, of course.
But he was adamant. He said, hey, you're not the first person to call about Dr. Siddiqui. We don't agree with or support his comments on Israel. However, there's nothing we can do about it, is essentially what he said to me, Michael. Our hands are tied. Siddiqui is tenured, and he has freedom of speech, and we cannot control what he does or says on his own time as a private citizen. We'll make sure that his genocidal radical rhetoric doesn't seep into the classroom, though. We'll make sure he doesn't pass it on to his students.
Well, sure, okay. But how are they going to do this?
How they'll do that, I don't know. Will they have someone monitoring all of his classes? My follow-up question to that, Michael, was, okay, you're not going to fire this guy, even though he's called for the destruction of the Jewish people, denied the Holocaust, etc. You're not going to fire him. But let's take a similar situation here, Mr. Hill. Say you had a member of the Nazi Party or the KKK. Say in their free time, of course, they were attending Klan rallies or attending Nazi rallies and calling for the death of blacks, the death of Jews. Call me crazy, but I don't think Lincoln would continue to employ these guys. Call me crazy, but I think they'd be fired right away.
Exactly.
there would be outrage. But in Siddiqui's case, Pakistani Muslim, everything is, hey, what can we do about it? Our hands are tied.
Well, you talk about a classic double standard.
A bigot, a radical, a racist, an anti-Semite is the same by any stripe, no matter what he belongs to, what group, what affiliation he has, and he has no place on a college campus, none at all. As I said, this school has received $200 million in Pennsylvania state money since 2003, and I'm still waiting for a response from Lincoln University. They have yet to respond, to say anything definitive about my report about Siddiqui. Like I said, I got some comments, not even on camera, from their executive vice president, but since then they have not returned my emails, Michael.
Unbelievable.
Hopefully, you know, in a respectful way, I hope people let Lincoln University know what they think. And I don't know where the funding, if there's donors and people who, alumni who donate to this school, but I think the heat should be turned up and the pressure should be turned up over their employment of this Dr. Siddiqui. It's insane.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael, before I forget, I actually communicated with Dr. Kalkab Siddiqui via email.
What did he say?
In a long, rambling response to my questions, it was an anti-Semitic-tinged email. He tried to be as politically correct as he could because I think he knew he was being called on the carpet and a journalist was on to him. But in his response, he said that he's not anti-Semitic and his, quote, speaking out about Israel conforms to the ideals and principles that founded Lincoln University.
The college had nothing to say about this man?
He went on to say, when I refer critically to the Jews, I'm referring to the leadership of Israel, not to the Jewish race as a whole. Really? That's interesting, Dr. Siddiqui, because your statements seem to suggest otherwise. You seem to be calling for genocide of the Jewish people and the state of Israel as a whole. But you know why this case interests me so much, Michael, with this professor who hasn't lost a job for what he's done?
Why is that?
Two reasons. Number one, we recently had a guy who burned a Quran at Times Square. Just one guy burned one Quran. I wouldn't have done it personally, but hey, free speech, right? Free speech is universal, right? Burns the Quran off his work hours and gets fired from his job at New Jersey Transit. Fired because of this incident, which was done outside of work hours.
Right, right, right.
Number two, Juan Williams, who's a Fox News analyst, but also he worked for NPR, National Public Radio. NPR fired him because of comments he made the other day talking about when he sees Muslims in Muslim garb on an airplane, he gets a little nervous. He gets a little unsettled. He was honest, a rare quality in journalism today. Look, Williams is on the left. I don't agree with most of what he says, probably all of what he says, to be honest with you. But look, the guy showed some refreshing candor, and he said, hey, I feel uncomfortable when people are around me in Muslim garb on an airplane. He had the guts to say it publicly. He should be commended. Yet NPR, in a politically correct, disgusting, cowardly maneuver, fires Juan Williams for this comment. Fires him. Unbelievable. So Juan Williams can lose his job for that innocuous, honest comment. Yet this college professor who's calling for the destruction of a people and a country gets to keep his job. Michael, I'll tell you, it's a world turned upside down.
Well, I agree. Thanks for the report, Eric.
Michael, thanks again. You can catch all of my reports on Stackelbeck on Terror, the show. You can find it most easily on cbnnews.com. Thanks again.
The left's passion for free speech only applies to those who follow the left's own agenda. This is Michael Savage.
Savage.
Let's talk about dogs. New York, Jim, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Mike, I just want to tell you, probably what Teddy is doing is he's masking his scent. I have a dog, a Chihuahua Pomeranian.
Wait, you mean when he pees on a garbage can or a fire hydrant or a shrub and then he rubs against it, he's doing what?
Yeah, well, what dogs do, this is what the vet told me, because I just went through this last week with my dog. See, a lot of dogs are marking their spots all over. And what these dogs do is they're picking that up because their sense of smell is so great. And what they instinctively do is they try to, you know, rub themselves onto it and mask their scent so they just don't stick out predominantly.
So in other words, the dog comes home smelling like a fire hydrant. Because he wants to mask his own scent, or he wants to mask their scent?
He wants to mask his scent so he could sneak up on prey. It's primarily...
Okay. So like if a dog finds a fish in the street or any kind of food item, he'd roll on it like that way so that the fish doesn't know that he rolled on it? I don't get it.
Like another dog?
Well, I can tell you, now I know why we're the master and they're the dog. That's all I can say. This logic doesn't work for me. It doesn't work. I mean, now I know why I hold the leash. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm glad he ain't holding the leash. I don't rub against things like that. I mean, would you? That's why they're called dogs. That's all. They're wonderful companions. But I got to tell you the truth. I had to wash the dog when I got home. I couldn't have him in the house. I had to get into underwear. I had to get in the bathtub with him. I had to turn the water on. I had to get the dog shampoo. I had to wet myself. I had to wet him. I had to wash him. All right. I love the little animal, so I didn't mind. I did for him what I never did for my own children. I'll admit it to you. You know, I never changed a diaper in my life. I don't know whether I'm sorry to admit it or I'm not saying I'm proud of it. It's the way I am. It's the way I was raised. My father never changed a diaper. I never changed a diaper. I walked out of the room. There was nothing more disgusting to me than a child's a diaper. I couldn't stand it. I would get, to this day, I gag if I'm around the child with a dirty diaper. I gag. And it's why you say to me, why are you... I will not eat in a restaurant with a coloring book. I don't care if it's $100 a glass of wine. The minute I see a coloring book, I leave the restaurant. I know I don't belong there. I know a lot of older parents now think it's cool to bring a child to a restaurant. They give them a coloring book. Some bring globes. I'm surprised they don't bring a tutor and a blackboard, you know, with a video, a whole video set up and do a whole lesson and you got to listen to. The worst people in the world are the 50-year-old guys who finally met a girl through youjerk.com or whatever. And they find a girl that way, another egghead. They meet each other, and they have one child, one sickly little child who isn't fed properly that they raise on vegetarian food, and the child's dying for B6, carnitine, and iron. They raise their boy so that the boy probably could lactate at age 11 by most of these diets. They're so feminized. But they go in a restaurant, and they start giving lectures to the child, and you're nearby. You want to bang your head on a glass. They give them lectures. The child don't even know what they're talking about. And they want you to hear how smart they are, either through their child. I don't know what it is. I don't go near it. So you say, well, wait a minute, Mike. You're a big mouth. You have a talk show. The answer, I thought about that. I said, well, what grates me about a guy who speaks loudly in a restaurant to start with? Because I don't. I hate people who yell in restaurants to begin with. I don't mind a conversation, a nice, healthy din, but a loud conversation, terrible. So I said, well, why does that bother you? What, are you an egomaniac? Only you want to talk? I said, I realized why. Because I'm on the radio. You're choosing to listen to me. You could turn this off. You could turn the volume down. In a restaurant, you're a captive audience. And these people know it. You've already put the money into the seat. You're already invested already. You're a captive audience. And those people who do it to you are abusing you in that regard. I don't know how to control. You can't control people. You cannot control people. They're going to do what they want to do anyway. But that's neither here nor there. We're just talking about etiquette and cultural mores. That's all. That's the whole story. And now let's go to the sound bites that we are playing on the show today. Harry Reid, in a sound bite, says that he saved the world. That it wasn't for him, we'd be in a worldwide depression. But the people who are too below him can't understand that because they're hurting and they don't understand that they're too low on the food chain.
We were at the top, and we have fallen very hard. So people have been hurting, and I understand that. And it doesn't give them comfort or solace for me to tell them, but for me, we'd be in a worldwide depression. They want to know what I have done for them.
Then there's Obama attacking Republicans as though the Republicans are running America, when in fact he has total control right now.
Nationally, if they win this election, the chair of the Republican Campaign Committee... promised to pursue the exact same agenda that they did before I took office.
And of course, there's the big story of the NPR fascism. Then there's Nancy Pelosi saying she has every anticipation she'll remain Speaker of the House.
I have every anticipation that we will come together in this a similar format as we are now with me as Speaker of the House.
1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's go to the website, by the way, and see what stories made it up to my great site. Here are the notes for the Savage Nation. Did Obama take advantage of a sports fan mentality in 08? I think so. Have the sports fans of America this year turned their hats forward and awakened because of the naked Marxism and failures of Obama? Do you fear the Democrats are going to steal the elections this year? What are you going to do to stop them? Well, look at my website. Illegals canvass for Democrat votes. Didn't see that one? Now, there's an open letter to the Savage Nation that you must read by Michael Warbowski from the Digital Journal. He said the multicultural doctrine is unraveling. Recently in Europe, some powerful allies have taken your side in agreement. Read the whole thing. I can't read it to you. Most Americans believe Obama should be a one-term president. Michael Savage says China on the verge of burying the U.S. Obama orders worshippers to vote. And on the top left, the most important story, stop socialism, buy your copy now of Trickle-Up Poverty. Why do I say it? Today, tomorrow, and Sunday is it. Unless we make it to number one on the nonfiction list, the comedian's book will be number one, and Obama will say that America is voting through the bookstores. Do you understand it? So if you're waiting for Christmas, don't wait. Now, having said that, many years ago I entered radio when I did a mock radio show called Immigrants and Epidemics. Guess what the illegals are bringing back into the United States? Whooping cough. And infants are dying. Whooping cough, also known as pertussis, has claimed the 10th child victim in California, calling it the worst outbreak in 60 years. But they won't tell you where it came back from. It came back from Mexico. Wake up, idiots!
Savage.